Being teen or younger and lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transsexual can have an effect on a person's home life. That's pretty much a given. But new research shows a correlation between LGBTQ young people and their living situations. They are more likely to live in unstable housing or be in foster care. These are among the findings explored by research just published by a team that includes our first guest. Stephen Russell is a professor of child development and the chair of the Department of Human Development and Family Sciences Population Research Center at the University of Texas at Austin. He's our guest and one of the research team. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So, Dr. Russell, what was the starting spark for the research?
Well, we've known for a while, we've known about multiple health problems for LGBTQ young people, and also we've known about the similar kinds of problems for kids that live in foster care or the child welfare system. And we were concerned about overrepresentation of LGBTQ young people in foster care and unstable housing. There is certainly lots of anecdotal evidence that LGBTQ kids are living in foster care or living outside of their homes, but there had only been local or regional studies that had been able to look at this question. And so we had this amazing, data from the state of California, statewide data from California, that allowed us to directly test whether LGBTQ young people were, in fact, more likely to be living in foster care or more likely to say that they weren't living at home with their original families, but were their housing was unstable.
I'm glad you made that point. We are talking about California data. You're the University of Texas. We get that. But this is all from California's health surveys?
Yeah. It's a California Healthy Kids Survey, which is a survey that is more than almost 600,000 students. In the state of California, 2015, over 1,200 schools. So it's a massive study, and with a study that large that included questions about sexual identity and gender identity, and also about foster care and homelessness, we're able to study a small population that is highly vulnerable.
How helpful is it to researchers to have that massive data from California's health surveys to work with?
Oh, well, it's been huge. I mean, in the last several years alone, the first statewide study of this scale that asked a question about transgender identity. And so to have transgender young people are, less than just around 1% of the population, at least in the California study. And so to have over nearly 600,000 students means that you have a large enough sample to actually study health disparities in transgender youth and then, of course, also LGB youth and other kids who are vulnerable. So it makes a huge difference to have data like this from a school sample in California.
And now you said that the data is from around 2015 or so?
Yeah.
Is there any reason to believe that things might have changed much since that time? I mean, either in societal conditions or in individual conditions for the people we're talking about. I mean, anything that in the landscape in the background that might be worth noting that might have changed the situation since that time?
Well, it's a really interesting point. It's a interesting point. I mean, there's been a lot of concern in the last, since the change in the presidential administration with a number of actions and statements about, there was the Trump administration rescinded guidance to all schools related to support for transgender students. And, the degree to which those kinds of large-scale changes are felt by individual kids, is not fully known, although it received a lot of public attention. And we certainly know that things like public debates in the media do make a difference for the mental health of kids' lives. I mean, we like to think sometimes as adults that young people aren't paying attention to those kind of bigger, these things that we think don't, directly pertain to their everyday life, but we do know that it matters for them. The other thing is that California is one of only 13 states, including Oregon, that has protection for legal protection in the child welfare system based on sexual orientation as well as gender identity. And so, in some, one of the things that worries me is that data from California probably represent, a better case scenario than other places like my own state of Texas or other states that don't have legal protections built into the child welfare system.
So the situation could be a little more exaggerated, you think, or might have more people in unstable housing or foster homes in the states that don't have protections?
Yeah, I think that that's That's absolutely maybe the case. The other factor is that this was a survey in school, and we know that both LGBTQ kids as well as kids living, you know, the kids with unstable housing are less likely to be in school in the first place. So we're probably underestimating the kinds of effects that we saw. I mean, in our study, we documented not only overrepresentation of LGBTQ kids, but we showed that then those kids are particularly vulnerable for problems at school, for mental health problems, and for substance use. And so we're finding these disparities, and, you know, I'm concerned that this may be, you know, that the disparities might be even greater in other places.
Well, that's an excellent point. I haven't even considered that when I was looking at this data, that people are less likely to be in schools. If school is the reporting point, then you're missing a few people for sure.
Right. Well, probably missing the very most vulnerable kids.
Stephen Russell's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a professor of child development at the University of Texas and a researcher with Bianca Wilson, Laura Bombs, on a piece of research called LGBTQ Youth and Unstable Housing and Foster Care, published in Pediatrics a few weeks ago. You can join the conversation on the Exchange. Your thoughts, comments, questions about LGBTQ youth and the issues they go through in home life, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Foster care we get. I mean, are there particular criteria though for unstable housing?
Yeah, in this case, we use the definition on the survey. They included the definition that comes from the federal McKinney-Vento Act about kind of what counts as unstable housing, and that includes living in a friend's house, in a hotel or motel, or in a shelter. And so, I think that this is, you know, often some people might, you know, frame that as homelessness, and we're careful to call it unstable housing because, you know, in some ways, you know, the couch surfing or, you know, living in a temporary place, or living in a shelter, like a homeless shelter, has different meaning for kids and could, you know, have different lengths of time that they live in those situations. And so we're globally calling it unstable housing, that I think, you know, historically we have thought of as homelessness.
We get to talk about the McKinney-Vento guidelines a fair amount when we talk about the homeless issues in our region, and so it is pretty much any housing that isn't with your parents in a place that you know you're going to have next month. Is that pretty much turned into unstable housing by McKinney-Vento's definitions?
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly not a lawyer or expert on it, but that is, I think the way you just described it is a great way to, you know, it's like not living in, you know, not having a stable home with your original family or parents or caregivers, and not having an expectation of permanence. And those are obviously things which, when we think about the case for teenagers and children, importantly undermining of, you know, health and well-being for kids.
Right. But we should point out, too, that's the reason the McKinney-Vento Act exists, so that students, even if they're in unstable housing situations, can stay in the school where they know the people, the teachers, the students, all that stuff. And so that's right. One of the things going on there. So let's get into the how much question. How much more prevalent is foster care or unstable housing for LGBTQ minors?
Yeah. What our data are showing is that, you know, we're looking at 2 to 4 times the representation compared to heterosexual kids, compared to straight kids. So, you know, only just less than 2% of the youth population live in foster care, but among LGBTQ, almost 14% of LGBTQ kids say that they live in foster care. So it's a huge, huge disparity, and it's the numbers, the disparity for trans kids is even greater, and it looks like much of the vulnerability that we see among LGBTQ kids is concentrated among trans kids. So it's super concerning when we think about the intersection of these different kinds of vulnerabilities that kids might have.
So did the survey results of the 600,000 students just get into checking boxes, or could people give reasons why they're in those housing situations? Or if without that, is there an operating theory for the circumstances that drive LGBTQ youth into foster care?
Yeah, that's an area where we don't know as much as we'd like to know. And it's certainly not, it's beyond the scope of this study. This is definitely a paper pencil, you know, fill in the bubble survey, you know, massive school-based survey. So we don't have data from this study about, you know, the reasons that kids aren't living in their original, you know, their homes of origin. But we certainly have a 10 years, 15 years of research on the health and well-being of LGBTQ kids that tells us that family rejection is all too common for kids, for sexual minority and gender minority kids, and including, I think it's less common than it used to be, but, you know, including family rejection to the point of violence or being kicked out of your home. And so, you know, we certainly have from other data strong evidence that LGBTQ kids are likely to either, you know, run away themselves or to be pushed out of their homes. Which is likely to put them in contact with the child welfare system, or at least have them, you know, in an unstable housing situation.
So it seems like by some other findings, life does not necessarily get better when moving out of home and into foster care. I mean, what kinds of things happen to LGBTQ youth in foster care?
Yeah, well, that's one of the concerning things too. I mean, once in foster care, LGBTQ kids, there's evidence already from the child welfare system and people that study kids that are living in the child welfare system that LGBTQ kids are more likely to have multiple placements, so they're less likely to have stability in placements once they're in the system. They're more likely to live in group rather than single homes with a single family. They're more likely to live in group settings. And they're also more likely to experience, victimization or harassment or negative experiences in their home placements. So kind of the same story that we, you know, had heard a long time about the, you know, negative experiences LGBTQ kids had when they might come out to their original families, similar kinds of patterns we see in the foster care, in the child welfare system. So that's it is why these laws to protect sexual orientation, gender identity in child welfare are so important, because the system needs to be able to assure that kids are safe once they're already there. I mean, one of the things about the study is that we found that vulnerabilities for kids were greater in foster care than in unstable housing, and you know, you would hope that some kind of system of care would be better than like having none at all, which is roughly the equivalent, although there's a lot of variability in what it means to be in unstable housing. But, you'd hope. One of the things I worry about is that people will interpret this as child welfare is not doing enough, or child welfare is terribly broken. And I think, you know, one of the problems is, I know that there are amazing people working in child welfare to support LGBTQ kids. And I think the bigger issue is, you know, public commitment and support and funding for the child welfare system that can make sure and assure that every kid is supported.
Stephen Russell, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, professor of child development at the University of Texas at Austin, looking at California data with colleagues Laura Bombs and Bianca Wilson to produce a piece called LGBTQ Youth in Unstable Housing and Foster Care, published a few weeks ago. Questions, comments from you? Join us on the Exchange, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So some of the issues that arise for LGBTQ youth that you mentioned earlier, poorer school functioning, more substance use, poorer mental health compared with heterosexual youth. Are the numbers quantifiably worse in foster care versus unstable housing?
Well, it's where it gets tricky. The sheer numbers look worse for foster care. The statistically speaking, the disparities are greater in unstable housing, and I think this is really because once you get down to less than 1% of kids in foster care and less than 5% of kids are LGB, we get down to, frankly, pretty small numbers even in out of 600,000 kids. So you get into, 1% of 5%, and
okay. Mm-hmm.
we're at small numbers. But, the rough story is it looks like just in terms of the averages, it looks like, living in foster care, kids fare worse. And on these health outcomes or school outcomes, what the study clearly shows is that these are two groups, meaning sexual gender minority kids and kids, in unstable housing or foster care, that are already vulnerable. But it's the intersection that's particularly concerning, and so it's like it's measurably worse if you're LGBTQ and in foster care than if you're either one of those statuses by itself. So. I think it's one of the reasons we, you know, especially need to be concerned about how we are providing, you know, safe and affirming, you know, care for sexual gender minority kids when their you know, original family lives are disrupted.
Is there any other state that provides the reams of data or something even coming close to it, and perhaps one that, unlike California and Oregon, does not protect foster kids from harassment and discrimination based on gender and sexuality? In other words, is there any other state that might provide you a basis for comparison?
Yeah, you know, I'm a total data geek, and I've been looking for it, and so I don't think it exists. I might be wrong. Maybe someone will hear this and correct me, and if you do, email me, let me know. But I wish that we had data like this from Texas. You know, in general, there's a long-standing issue of not even asking questions about sexual identity or gender identity on the surveys that we use to monitor the health and well-being and education of young people. So in most cases, we just have silence and invisibility in terms of the data. So it's a huge issue, and I would love it if you know we had better data from across the country to monitor the well-being of, you know, the most vulnerable kids.
Yeah, it would certainly help understand what's out there. Sure. So give us the wide shot here, Stephen. What is the big takeaway or confirmation here?
Well, I think the big takeaway to me is that, you know, we've known about vulnerabilities for both groups of kids for a long time, and it's the you know, what we can show is that this intersection is, you know, especially concerning and obviously worthy of investment and attention to figure out what we can do to create programs in schools or through child welfare services or through housing services to create supportive environments for all kids. I mean, I think that's a big takeaway. I think one of the other takeaways is that we have had for a long time a narrative of things getting better. And I think it's important to realize that growing up is, you know, being a teenager is hard no matter what. And, you know, being a teenager, especially if your housing life is disrupted, if your family life is disrupted, and if you're navigating a stigmatized identity, it's not super easy. And we need to do a better job of not assuming that, you know, just because there might be equality of marriage for adults, that, for example, that, you know, everything's better for teenagers.
Indeed. You're not the first researcher we've talked about the California numbers. At least the fact that California pulls in so much statistical information about the people who live in the state really does help researchers like yourself. This, again, is called LGBTQ Youth in Unstable Housing and Foster Care. It's the work of three researchers, Laura Bombs, Bianca Wilson, and Stephen Russell, who is a professor of child development and the chair of the Department of Human Development and Family Sciences Population Research Center at the University of Texas at Austin, who's been our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Dr. Russell, thanks so much for illuminating the numbers for us.
Hey, thanks so much for bringing attention to it.